Paul Saunders is a Rees MA graduate. Yay. From 1992. He's gone on to just such an illustrious career. He's now the executive director of the Nixon Center, and he serves as director of its U.S.-Russian relations program. He, too, has very wide-ranging interests and expertise and experience on questions of energy, climate change, environmental policy. I'll mention just one of his publications, Russian Energy and European Security. Also, a variety of different aspects of both U.S. and Russian foreign policy. He obviously can't talk about all of this today. I'm giving you a sense of his breadth and background. He also has experience in several ways in government. Again, I'll just mention one example of that. He served as senior advisor to the Undersecretary of State for Global Affairs from 2003 to 2005, where he was dealing, well, as that would suggest, primarily with transnational issues, but many of them related to our region. That is Russia, Ukraine, its neighbors to the east, to the south, and so on. Today, however, he'll be building in many ways on last week's event. That is to focus on Russian domestic politics, to explore the murky relationships between presidents and prime ministers. I wonder who this could be, and to delve into all sorts of other issues to boot. I know there'll be lots of questions about this. It's on many of our minds, and it will continue our conversation about contemporary politics in Russia today. And for that reason, it will continue our momentum for the year. So without further ado, Mr. Saunders.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming. It's really just a treat, and I'm very delighted to be able to come back here to Michigan. I appreciate very much the invitation and all of the help from the staff here in making it happen. And it's particularly meaningful for me, I guess, because I remember coming to these events when I was a student, and I particularly remember some in the audience might also remember, I think, George Colt coming and speaking at one of these events, another alum who ended up becoming the National Intelligence Officer for Russia at the CIA. If I remember correctly, perhaps also Ed Hewitt, who was a leading economist of the USSR and later worked at the National Security Council. Both of them, unfortunately, have subsequently passed away, but it's just really, on a personal level, terrific to have been invited to come, and I'm so happy to do it. Before I start speaking substantively, I'll do a little bit of my own shameless self-promotion, if you don't mind, because I brought a couple of our institutional publications along, and I see two or three of them still over there. One is the National Interest Magazine, something that hopefully many of you are familiar with, but I'm certain that not enough of you are buying. So please help yourselves. We, unlike in the past, have a great website now, actually, with daily commentary also. The other thing I put up there is a report that we did in the spring based on the work of a bipartisan commission chaired by former Senator Gary Hart and former Senator Chuck Hagel. And this was an effort to give the then new Obama administration some ideas about what we thought might be a useful approach to Russia. And it was a very illustrious group with a number of former ambassadors to Russia, some other top officials like Brent Scowcroft, for example. So anyone who's interested in policy issues, I'd certainly encourage you to look at that, and it's also on our website. So it's a promotion over. Moving along to the topic, Russia, who's in charge? I picked the topic a few months ago in the spring, actually, when I got the invitation, and I was fairly confident at the time that it would remain a relevant one, but certainly it was interesting to see the comments last week from Putin and this week from Medvedev, which I think make it clear that it does have continuing relevance. in talking about it, I guess I will divide my comments maybe into three or four points here, and I'll try not to go for more than 20 or 25 minutes so that we have plenty of time for questions. The first question I would ask, though, when we're thinking about who's in charge in Russia, I think is one that we have to ask ourselves, which is, does it matter to the United States who's in charge in Russia? And I guess my answer to that question would be yes, but maybe a qualified yes, that we need to keep that in perspective. And certainly the United States has a variety of important interests at stake in our relationship with Russia, and non-proliferation, counterterrorism, energy, arms control. There are a number of other issues. But at the same time, you know, it's clear that we have a very limited ability to affect developments in Russia, that our views are not particularly welcome, and that to the extent that we had a chance to play a more significant role in Russia's internal development, that time passed in the 1990s. And I guess finally, you know, I would say one other thing reflecting some of my own personal biases, but I'm not sure that one could necessarily assume that a different leadership in Russia would pursue profoundly different policies as far as they impact the United States. And I think, you know, there are a variety of reasons for that. One of the central ones being that there actually is a pretty broad, if somewhat nebulous, consensus inside the country on some key elements of their foreign policy, having a major but still rather undefined role in the former Soviet Union, being assertive in standing up to the United States, using energy for leverage where they can. I think these are some of the areas where there's a fairly broad consensus, and it's not clear that by picking some other leader, there would be a big difference in the policy outcome. The next question I would ask is one that I think I can ask in a university setting, but if I asked it in Washington, people's eyes would start to glaze over, which is, you know, is anybody really in charge in Russia? And I think that's an interesting question to think about, and certainly our media coverage often portrays this very strong authoritarian state where people live under all kinds of different restrictions. But at the same time, the Russian government has a very difficult time doing a lot of the things that it claims that it wants to do. I think that has to call into question, to at least to some extent, how strong the Russian state really is. And if you look just a few months ago, I don't remember the exact date anymore, at these protests in Pikalyova, this little town in western Russia, one of these one industry towns. There were the main industry, I think, aluminum plant. They weren't paying their employees. There was a big protest. Workers went and blocked a major highway, and then they, you know, get Putin's attention, and Putin comes there and solves the problem. You know, on one hand, Putin addressed that particular problem, but on the other hand, you know, how many of those towns are there? And the Russians recognize that themselves, and in their own media coverage, you know, there were a number of different articles saying things along the same lines. You know, we need 100 Putins, or we need 1,000 Putins, because you know, they have to go one by one and address each of these crises instead of doing it in a systemic way, because the system cannot accomplish it in a systemic way. A related question that I would ask is, you know, what does it actually mean to be in charge in Russia? I think that's kind of an interesting question to think about. Again, you know, it's not a totalitarian state. Personally, I don't think it's even a particularly strong authoritarian state. I think it's more of a weak authoritarian state. And at the same time, you have this massive and very widespread corruption. And I guess from my point of view, being in charge tends to have, you know, perhaps less to do all the time with government policy and instituting particular, implementing particular objectives in the state, and a little bit more to do with controlling access to and the distribution of, you know, the resources of the state to people who are interested in getting their hands on them. You know, that, I think, is kind of a good segue to Putin and Medvedev, because I think that is certainly one area where we see some competition. And now Putin and Medvedev, obviously, publicly when they speak, they both downplay the idea that there's any competition between the two of them. It was a little bit funny, actually, when Medvedev was elected. I remember reading online some commentary at the time. There had been all of this debate in the U.S. Kind of Russia-watching community, and people saying, you know, this was historically unprecedented for Russia to attempt to have two leaders at the same time, and how could it really work out, and one of them would have to be in charge and the other not. And there were some, I guess you would call them pro-government analysts who were responding to this by saying, well, no, actually, it's not unprecedented because, of course, the Soviet Union had this period of collective leadership after Khrushchev was ousted, which I thought was kind of a funny argument to make because that was, at best, a transitional state. For the system. It lasted as long as it took Brezhnev to consolidate his power and to turn it from collective into to one person. But in any event, you know, it's very clear that there is some real, let me turn this off, sorry. It's very clear that there is some real competition between Putin and Medvedev, and particularly between their subordinates. And as a political scientist, I guess I, unlike Paul Kubitschek, who's here, I didn't finish my PhD, so I'm not a real political scientist. As someone with that background and set of biases, it's very difficult for me to imagine a situation where you can have these two separate staffs under the two men and avoid competition. You are structurally creating competition by having these two groups of people. And it's something that we see very commonly. Again, a lot of it having to do with control over and access to resources. And that is something that is really zero sum. You know, you award a contract to a particular firm and it doesn't go to another firm. So these are a lot of the kinds of decisions where I think this competition plays out. But you certainly do also see public differences on policy issues, sometimes between Medvedev and Putin, although rather rarely. More commonly between the people who advise them. For people who have been following Russian economic policy and the response to the financial crisis in Russia, there have been real differences of opinion between Kudrin, for example, the finance minister who's reporting to Putin, and Arkady Dorkovich, who is Medvedev's economic advisor. With Dvorkovich tending to be much more skeptical of what the government is doing and expecting the consequences of the crisis to be more dire. So you see these kinds of real differences. We also saw, taking it up to the level of Putin and Medvedev, a difference around the end of last year. Some may remember the protests in the Far East over this issue of the duty on imported Japanese cars. And the local officials weren't willing to crack down. They had to send Amon special police from the Moscow region to deal with the protests. Putin spoke out very soon after this, you know, wanting to hold the local leaders accountable for failing to deal appropriately with these protests. And Medvedev said, well, you know, I don't think we really need to do that. So there are really some clear cases of differences, and there are also some clear differences in their statements, their goals, their tone. Some may have seen, I think it was either earlier this week or last week, this big article by Medvedev, Forward Russia, where he lays out his vision for Russia. And, you know, much of it is things that he said before, but really quite critical of the situation inside Russia, you know, to a degree that it could have been written, or major sections of it could have been written by people in opposition, or, you know, by some people in the West, for that matter. Clearly a very strong statement. Putin is also critical at times of developments in Russia, but never really at such length and in such detail. So I found that also very interesting. We also have a situation where issues that come up and require policy responses play to each of their strengths in different ways. And I think that can also be an area where you see a little bit of competition, jockeying for visibility, et cetera. Georgia, I think, is certainly a case of that. And we saw in the immediate aftermath of the war, and actually during the war, you know, Putin taking this very visible role, flying to the region and looking in charge. The financial crisis, where I think Putin had less to offer in a policy sense in terms of how to deal with the crisis, we saw Medvedev much more out front and talking about solutions and possibilities and critical of the government's response. So I think developments inside the country and in their foreign relations also affect a little bit the way that this back and forth works. I'll try to wrap up in just a few minutes here. It's an interesting relationship between the two of them, and I guess I see it as in some ways less than meets the eye, you know, this idea that there's competition, and in some ways more. You know, why less? I think there's really less than meets the eye to this Putin statement of last week about 2012. You know, somebody asked him whether he was going to run, and what was he supposed to say? If he said, yes, I'm going to run, then Medvedev is kind of wiped out as a political figure in Russia. If he says, no, I'm not going to run, then people start really jumping on the Medvedev bandwagon, and he compromises his own situation potentially fairly severely. So he really had to say, you know, that he hadn't decided yet, and he also had to say that he would talk to Medvedev about it. If he said he hadn't decided yet and didn't say that he was going to talk to Medvedev about it, you know, that also would have been something that would undermine Medvedev. So there's been a lot of, you know, excitement about this, but I see it actually as kind of a predictable and not so exciting thing for Putin to say. You know, more important in terms of this idea that there's less than meets the eye is, you know, the fact that Putin is clearly in charge. I don't think very many people would dispute that. He really is dominant where it matters. He controls, to the extent that one can control, he controls the machinery of the state. He has considerably greater influence over the security services. We have this interesting case of General Viktor Zolotov, who used to be Putin's longtime head of his presidential security detail, and now has similar responsibilities for Medvedev, and people have speculated and asked a lot of questions about exactly what the nature of his role is. And unfortunately, in a place like Russia, it's hard to know how seriously to take a lot of that speculation, but it's certainly something that one has to take note of. And finally, to the extent that public opinion matters in Russia, and actually, I think it tends to matter, Putin has, at this point, still greater public trust and confidence. He's more popular. A plurality of people believe that he's ruling the country. There's a smaller group who believe that Putin and Medvedev are kind of sharing power, and then the very smallest group thinks that Medvedev is really in charge. So I think that also makes it clear that we have to be a little bit cautious when we're thinking about this competition and what it really means. At the same time, though, I think there is more to it than meets the eye in some other important ways. And the first one of those that I would point to is the fact that for his really entire term in office as president, Putin was fairly diligently working to be sure that there was no other individual or institution in that society who could challenge him or present a viable alternative. And now, for some reason, he decided that he would create himself someone who could be a viable alternative. And this person is the president of Russia, and he's on television all the time. He's meeting with foreign leaders all the time. At times, he's critical of the government's performance. More commonly, there are a lot of other people in Russia who, once Medvedev has criticized the government's performance, they feel like they can do the same thing. And he gives them political cover. And I think it creates a very interesting situation where this, again, you know, competition did not exist, and Putin decided to, for whatever reason, to bring it about. And while he, as I mentioned, is certainly in a position to circumvent Medvedev, remove Medvedev even from office if he wanted to, the longer the status quo continues, the higher the price of that becomes. That, I think, is something that really bears watching in the future. Now, since I'm in Washington, you know, we never end anything, finish anything that we're saying without talking about the policy implications. So I'll talk about the policy implications. This situation has led a lot of people to say, well, you know, the United States should really be backing Medvedev. You know, here's this young guy, he's this lawyer, he says all of these things that everybody likes. He wants to fight corruption. He wants to do this. He wants to do that. He doesn't have all of Putin's baggage. He's not a former KGB officer. He's not the one who was pursuing a lot of the foreign policy things that Putin was doing in the past. So, you know, let's promote Medvedev. I'm very skeptical of that line of argument, and I think it's a dangerous direction to go in for a variety of reasons. Reason number one is, you know, the administration is trying to pursue this reset with Russia. There will not be a reset with Russia without Vladimir Putin being on board. So you kind of have to choose, in my view, whether you want a reset with Russia or whether you want to back Medvedev. And I think there are certainly some people in the administration who understand that. I think there are also some who might disagree with it, but I think there's some who understand that. Secondly, as I mentioned, I believe that at least at this point, Putin could remove Medvedev at any time that he wanted to. And yes, the cost would be high, but if he got the idea that Medvedev was going to lead a successful rapprochement with the United States without him, and that he would accomplish something that he and Yeltsin both at least appeared to try but neither could succeed at, that would have such far-reaching consequences for Russia, that could become rather threatening to Putin, to his legitimacy, to his role. So, in my view, this kind of idea that we should be publicly backing Medvedev is a risky one, because I think we, to put it bluntly, set him up in a situation where we cannot defend him or protect him. Now, there's also a third question, of course, which is the one I raised at the beginning. You know, how sure can we be that there actually would be a truly profound difference in foreign policy between the two? And Medvedev was very encouraging in a lot of things that he said in this Forward Russia article that I mentioned, really outlining a very positive vision for how Russia would work with the West, and they would be getting all of this foreign investment and becoming an innovation economy and modernizing and all of these things. And he may well want that, and even want to try to do that, but it is difficult to know how successful he would be, particularly in a situation when either when Putin is there, or alternatively, you know, if you want to take kind of the really optimistic scenario, you know, Putin decides to disengage from politics in 2012, and Medvedev runs on his own. Then Medvedev no longer has Putin protecting his right flank, as it were. And would he really be in a political position to make a lot of the statements that he's making now in that kind of an environment? And I think we saw a little bit already some hints of what could happen if the United States really did get behind Medvedev and try to push. And we saw, for example, you know, when the president went to Moscow in July, he made this kind of unfortunate comment on the way over about Putin still having one foot in the past you know, one in the present or the future or whatever. I don't remember where the other foot was. You know, then he ended up having a pretty frosty 2-hour meeting with Putin, which started, from what I understand, with like a 50-minute lecture from Putin uninterrupted about all of Russia's grievances. And, you know, I'm sure, number one, that Obama already knew all of Russia's grievances from his briefing papers. But number two, you know, again, it's just not a constructive way to try to have a reset. And, you know, the summit from the Russian perspective was a successful one, but I think we saw afterward, again, you know, Medvedev had a successful summit, so Putin did a number of things to try to get himself on television and in the newspapers, including, you know, riding around on his horse without his shirt on, which is, I mean, on one hand, kind of, it's kind of flippant to mention it. But on the other hand, you know, when you think about that society, that's not something that number two does, right? I mean, that's something that number one does. And everybody knows when you're doing that how supremely self-confident you have to be to do it.